Mind, Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about the seven deadly sins. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Gina Breck is a longtime contributor to the show. She's here to explore the seven deadly sins, as we have been doing through the months with me. This time, the last one. This is the last sin for us to discuss. Sloth. No, don't turn off the show. Sloth sounds dull, but according to Gina, it's the sin of all the seven deadly sins that she fears the most. Now, that had my attention. Gina Barreca is Hartford Current columnist and UConn professor of literature. So, sloth. Gina, how I associate it with laziness, mm-hmm. and it's really that simple for me, and I don't think much about this. So, you know, what's your definition, and does it involve sheep?
It really doesn't. And it doesn't involve possums or those kind of animals that hang, you know, the sloths versus the sloths. No, sloth for me sort of encompasses sins of omission. And that's what I think people are really – my definition of what's going to send you to an unhappy place in your afterlife are the things that you didn't do, are what you wasted in life, either talents or time that you wasted, the opportunities that you were given that you didn't take. Seems to me that,
you know, I was going to say, let's get into what some of those might be, because we're going to ask people, our listeners, just people, we're going to ask our listeners to call in and talk with us about slothful moments.
Right.
Or what you think sloth means. Go ahead.
And so that I think that it's, you know, one whole section of sloth could be filed under procrastination, right? The putting off of things. The idea that I'll do it tomorrow. It's good enough. That's another, you know, in some ways, it's a lot of things that people feel is healthy, but like everything else, like any kind of prescription medicine, any kind of prescription taken too far, what's good for you can kill you.
Let's pause on that one. It's good enough, you're saying, can be slothful.
Absolutely.
But here's the thing. People who want to do well and don't succeed at a given task can beat themselves up. And the game with them is to teach them right away to say to themselves, you know, I tried so hard in that moment. I wanted to do the best that I could. And in fact, I did the best I could. It's not the bar I set for myself, but I did the best I could. Now, how is that slothful?
I don't think that that's slothful if it's really the best that you can do. When it's slothful is when you're telling yourself that it's the best you can do and you know it isn't. Now, I'm not talking about people who are perfectionists to the point where it actually interferes with their lives. I mean, I'm talking about what I've got in the essay that you've got online, right, on the website is, you know, sloth cheats on exams, drinks straight from the milk carton, and leaves exactly two sheets on the toilet roll so that it will have to be replaced by the next poor soul who finds out too late that the remaining paper is nothing but a mirage. Sloth never gets around to RSVPing but shows up at the party anyway. Sloth says, marry her. She'll make your life easier because she loves you more than you love her. After all, they're basically the same. It murmurs, don't contradict him. It isn't worth the argument. He'll only sleep on the far side of the bed. That sloth is the easy way out, and the easy way out, as for most of us, turns out never to be easy. You know, you do something because you think, oh, it'll save a few steps, it'll cut a few corners. There's real work, like emotional work, intellectual work, spiritual work that needs to be done entirely. Not always well, but it needs to be done thoroughly. And if you try to cut corners on that, it comes back. It comes back and it gets you.
So I start to see why this is the sin of all the seven deadly sins that fills you with the most fear, because what you're starting to get to is, as you mentioned, the wasted life, the waste of precious time, the inability to grasp that none of us know how long we're going to be here. Right. Or what's around the corner. Life is surprising, as I like to say.
Right.
So you're saying, and I think, you know, I always have this, I have this little game I play, you know, how would I feel about this on my deathbed?
Right.
And looking back, what you're saying is you fear saying, I wasted time in these particular ways.
Right.
So it.
And that's because, I mean, there's a really big difference between playing and wasting, right? I mean, that if you choose to play, I had a conversation with my friend Pam last night, and she said that she feels like when she's cooking for herself, she's on her own now. Her husband's a filmmaker. He's on a shoot, and her kids are out of the house. And so this is the first time in 27 years that she's home by herself for like a couple of months at a time. And she says she hates cooking for herself because she feels like she's wasting time, where I love cooking for myself. I don't have a problem with making a whole meal for myself. I'll then save it tomorrow if for some reason, you know, my husband's out of town or something. I will make a meal and I will sit down and eat it. That's what I've always done. I consider that a wonderful use of my time. I love cooking. That's something that relaxes me. I enjoy it. I don't even mind the cleaning up. And she feels like it's a waste of time. And for me, the making of food or taking a long bath, which is something I consider that a hobby for me, actually. I mean, other people play tennis. I take long baths. You know, it's a sport. We don't do it competitively, but I still think it's a sport. I think a long bath. But that's a frivolous activity. Something that's frivolous that you're indulging yourself in because it feels good is very different from doing something that's trivial. And I'm scared of the seduction of the trivial. I've spent a lot of time, when I look back on my life, and that's one of the things I talk about in the essay, is that you can get seduced by the trivial.
Huh. Because give me an example of one, when you feel like you...
There was one time when I was living in England, this many years ago when I was in my 20s with a guy, with a surprise, and I spent time baking bread. Now, again, I said I like to cook. Other people make great bread. I'm not actually a big bread fan, which is astonishing as an Italian, but I'm not. I didn't like it. I didn't, as far as I could tell, didn't do a particularly good job of it. We were living in a tiny little apartment. It, you know, had like two burners. It was in England, for God's sake. They don't even know what bread is, you know. And they know what toast is, but they don't know what it comes from. And you know, the origin of toast. And I was making bread, and I was baking bread for him, which he didn't even want. I mean, he was a medical student. He wasn't even that interested in coming home and eating. He just wanted to fall asleep. He was in his residency. And I was doing this, and then I would make him feel guilty about the fact that I had spent all afternoon doing this as if I were doing it for him, and I wasn't. I was doing this activity so I could feel domestic, so I could feel like I was drawing him closer to me, so I could justify the use of my time when I knew I should be facing what was I going to do next in my life. You know, this relationship really wasn't going anywhere. I knew I had to get out of it.
So it was avoidance.
Absolutely. But I was very busy. I was very busy, and I would have this whirlwind of busyness. I would have coffee with everybody I met. And I consider coffee another, having coffee with people a sport. But I spent that year and a half, anybody that I would meet for 5 minutes, I'd say, let's get a cup of coffee. And we would have a cup of coffee. And some of them were great conversations. And I'm glad I had them. But other ones, they were just filling up the time so I didn't have to face the real blank wall that I had in my life. And I think it would have been fairly easy to have, if this guy and I finally hadn't really made each other so miserable we couldn't stay together, I think it would have been very easy to have done that for the rest of my life. I look back on that part of my life and I see such a close call. Like when you're on the highway and a truck comes into your lane without signaling and you're just so grateful that you weren't looking at the console at that moment, that you actually could break in time and you hit the horn. I mean, that was that moment in my life. And I got out, but I could have stayed in there with very, very little encouragement. I could have stayed in that place wearing Laura Ashley dresses. Do you remember those? Mm-hmm. They were big in those days.
No.
This is Laura Ashley dresses, which were on me the most unflattering, even when I was 22. I looked like an upholstered chair. I mean, it wasn't a good look, you know, but I was baking bread.
Wait a minute. So how did you? So Gina Breck is here, and we're on the last of the seven deadly sins that we have been continuing to explore when Gina comes by the studio, and we've been through them all. Lust was really the most fun. So But how did you, so you're wasting time, mm-hmm. you're keeping yourself busy with trivial things, right. So as not to face these existential questions inside.
And they're not even.
How
did it stop? And actually, this is a real story. My brother's 6 years older than I am, Hugo, sent me an airmail letter, because all I was doing, remember, there used to be airmail letters. I mean, you had to wait 7 days to get a letter from overseas. And it was this cheap blue paper that you used to get that was very thin. It was like onion skin paper. And I had just been writing series of unhappy letters to my brother and my father, my only living relatives. And my brother finally got the nerve up, I guess, or was, you know, so exhausted and frustrated by getting these endless letters from his sad sister. He wrote, taking up the entire piece of airmail paper, "You can always stop what you're doing." And it was like the Bugs Bunny light bulb going on over his head, where like it says, idea. You can always stop what you're doing. Now, given that I thought I really hadn't been doing much, I really did. It was one of the few times in my life that I made ever this kind of decision. I packed my bags. I got a one-way ticket back to New York. I ended up going back to England to go to Cambridge University. But I left the keys on the bed in that little apartment where I had been using the two-burner stove and headed off for home with a one-way ticket. And
What did his letter make you face?
It made me realize that I could stop what I was doing. I mean, I thought I was just like, you know, it wasn't even a treadmill. It was like stomping grapes, except that produces wine, which is a lovely frivolous item. But it was just like being in a pit, like a, you know, just trying to get your boots out of the mud. It was this sucking sound of all of this time in my 20s. And I think I was probably depressed. I mean, there were all of these other reasons for it. But it was also, I was convincing myself that sheer busyness could replace doing something that mattered. And what mattered to me was being with people that I really cared about. What mattered to me was producing something creative, was having fun. And I wasn't having fun.
So I think you're saying the balance of your life was off. You were stuck with the trivial and the other things. I mean, I admire that these cups of coffee with anybody who would sit
right.
down with you, because, you know, that is a search to connect.
Right.
And so how admirable, I think.
Oh, no, I think. And it taught me a lot. And people actually, when I look back on it, people were being very kind to me. I mean, I was this sort of, you know, exiled girl in a city. I was working sort of a stupid job. I mean, it wasn't, there were so few paths of satisfaction. But what I feel, that was procrastination. I was putting everything off. And sometimes we're, as I say in the essay, we're never as busy as when we have a deadline, when we know we need to do something.
And Gina's referring to an essay that she wrote, and it is posted on our website right now. So we're exploring sloth, the final deadly sin. And we posted that essay on sloth from Gina at WNPR.org. All you have to do is search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. It is worth reading and will get you thinking big time. So sloth for you, while I associate it pretty singularly with laziness, I now see as a much richer subject, thanks to you and your essay. But the other thing is that this idea of it being highly associated with procrastination is big.
Yeah, and I think that
So most writers are slothful.
Absolutely. I mean, no matter how many books we produce, writers are slothful. My house is never as clean, or my office, I should say, is ever as clean as when I've got a deadline. In fact, I was on Facebook, which is a very big, you know, spot of seduction for if you're interested in wasting time but feel like you're doing something, Facebook is great for that because it makes you feel important because people, you know, are on it and you're interacting with them. But really, so I was posting all kinds of little snippets of things. And I think it was a former student, but somebody who knows me for a long time said, She said, "I bet you have a deadline. When is your deadline? Is your deadline today or is it tomorrow?" And I said, "It's tonight. I have to file the story tonight." And she said, "I knew it, because otherwise you'd never be putting all of this stuff on Facebook. I knew you had a deadline."
So how is that sloth? Isn't that just, it's avoidance.
It's avoidance.
It's fear.
Mm-hmm.
The censor is talking. So what?
But I see it
why
as.
Why is it sloth?
Because it's doing other, it's finally, it's avoiding the real, you're on this quest, whatever it is. You're on the quest to, you know, write something. You're on the quest to, you know, to be a good partner, on the quest to whatever you're in the middle of. But you're doing these other things instead. You're playing video games instead. You're doing everything except
why
take yourself further on this quest.
But we often do this. or maybe I should say sometimes, I shouldn't, you know, put a number on this. We sometimes do this so that our brains, our psyches, our emotional intelligence can work it out, can figure things out. So what about that?
I think that's true. I mean, when Stephen King, and the best book about writing that I know, called On Writing by Stephen King, and my students are always shocked. It's like, you're giving us a Stephen King book to read? I said, this is a great book about the process of writing. And he says that you get the idea, and that some, then you have to let like the workmen do their job. You have to let the parts of the brain that are actually collecting these things go out and get them. And that's fine.
Well, you could label that as sloth.
You could, well, but I'm not, but I think that again, and I think that we know the differences, and that's why I'm eager to hear, like, what do people do and how do you get yourself out of it? When you know you're doing it, like I tell my PhD students, you can spend, a lot of people who never finish their doctoral diplomas, never get their doctorates, have spent all of their time doing research. At a certain point, there is endless research to do. At a certain point, you say, no, now I'm writing. Now I'm doing it.
See, I want to do a book in praise of wasting time because I think there are some benefits to
this. Good, let's talk about it.
But maybe I should call it sloth. Okay, here we're going to take a quick break, and then Gina Breck is going to come back. We'd like to invite you to talk with us, join the conversation with us. What do you think sloth is? Have you ever had this going on in your life? And did you have come to a point where you recognize, I'm wasting precious time? Retirees, I bet you might have something to say about this. 203-776-9677. We'll be right back. Find what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. In fact, right now, the essay Gina wrote on sloth, our seventh deadly sin, is up there, and it's really interesting. Gina, where'd that appear?
The Chicago Tribune.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So right now, also online, you can see all of our delicious recipes, wines, cocktails, and much more. So click on programs at WNPR.org for the Faith Middleton Show. Billy, Faith, and Gina, go ahead.
You know, this topic has made me realize something about myself that I have not really thought about. It's given me a whole new perspective. As a matter of fact, I'm going to use it in my my AA meeting tomorrow morning as a topic, because I realize that sloth, for me anyway, leads to other character defects. I remember going through college and feeling not very confident in myself, so I would hide out and drink. I mean, I made it through all right, but one of the big things in my life is looking back and thinking, oh, the things I could have done, but I spent all that time drinking. I can't guilt myself out and, you know, make myself crazy about that, because after I sobered up, I did, you know, some good things, and I think I've compensated. But listening to you guys has made me think, you know, I definitely engaged in sloth.
Billy, that is so great, Billy. And, you know, I have to jump in and say to you, by the way, when you talk about beating yourself up for the past, I read a book that I'm so sorry I can't remember the name of it, but I bet you could Google a line and find it. It's by a man who lives in Connecticut, and it was the history of saints in the Catholic Church, the real story of who these still existing saints were. And back in the day, we'll say, you got to be a saint declared by the Church, not because you were pure goodness, but because you had done really pretty horrific, terrible things, rape, murder, I mean, you know, stealing horrifically, and then reformed yourself and changed your life. And so the arc of a life, the change of a life, the reaching for something better was seen as sainthood. So I don't know if that makes you feel better.
Yeah.
And if I could just, Billy, if I could just mention, and thank you for the honor of sharing your story with us. That's really great. But I also think that looking back, because it was looking back at my youth too, when you're talking about looking back at college, I mean, I was, you know, right out of college. And I think that we also need to forgive the people that we were then for doing what they needed to do, whatever it was that they had to go through to get us to who we are now. That's a great thing. And now we just have to, you know, you have to work. It's like dancing double time or something. You have to dance even more and to make sure that, you know, there's not one moment of it that's lost.
And Billy, you mentioned drinking. And I think to myself, ooh, maybe sloth for you would be one of the biggest of the deadly sins, because, you know, obviously the devil in sobriety is, you know, ignoring,
right.
Ignoring that you need to go to meetings, ignoring that you're having feelings that might cause you to drink, ignoring that little voice on your shoulder that can start talking anytime that says, hey, I bet I could have a drink and just be fine.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So
that's exactly what sloth is.
You're perfect. You're just great. Thank you so much, Billy.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
203-776-9677. So sloth for you would be hiding from the self. And also, Gina, you know, I said this thing about in praise of wasting time.
Mm-hmm.
I say that because I have interviewed so many artists through all these years who've said everything I do goes into the work.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting around, quote unquote, wasting time watching cartoons.
Right.
This is a famous conductor. You know, reading a trashy novel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seeing something some gorgeous ballet. The whole gamut, eating,
mm-hmm.
breathing, everything ends up in a way going into the work. It informs me as a human being. So that includes wasting time.
But you see, I would say that isn't really, if they're frivolous, that's what I come in. It's not wasting time. It's doing other stuff. It's if you can put it back together, if you could put it together, it's not, that's different from the slothful voice that I think you so correctly identified for Billy or for anybody who's got the temptation that says, in 100 years, who's going to care? The people who are sitting down watching cartoons or going for a long walk or taking a nap when they need it. You know, that's not wasting time. That's mm-hmm. making good use of your time. But the wasting time is when it's, nah, I'll just sit, you know, when you're watching TV and another show comes on that you don't really want to see, but it's like, all right, I'll just watch it. And then when you tell yourself things like, in 100 years, who's going to know? What's it going to matter? You know, all of those tides that pull you into sort of nothingness that are about not using your energy and that take things away from you.
This is something, you know, this is turns out to be, here I was afraid we couldn't fill up an hour on talking about sloth, you know. If you ask, I remember we were talking on the show about asking palliative nurses were asking people who were terminal, what is it? Of all the things that you're the most concerned with, and the number one thing was regret.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of that regret must be about what you're talking about, that I had a chance so many times to live, you know, to connect.
Or to say something to somebody. I think that sloth also, I mean, not only is it, you know, again, I'm putting it under this big aegis, it's under this huge heading, but I think it's sloth, it's emotional laziness that sometimes prevents us from apologizing to somebody. Or saying to somebody, you know, I remember that one of the great things that my father was sick for a long time, as you know, before he died several years ago. And one of the great things about going to my shrink after that and talking to her, and she said, what do you wish you had said to your father? And I said, you know what? I got to say everything to my father I wanted to say. I said, I got to tell him the parts where he was such a terrible husband to my mother and made us sad, and how important it was when he changed. I realized that he could be a good father, even though he had been a bad husband to her. He was a good father to me, and all these realizations that we could talk about it, and that, you know, there was nothing that really through those last couple of years when he was so sick that we didn't address. And it was hard. It would have been so much easier just to watch TV. And it took all the strength both of us had. And, at the end, he really had very little. But it took us all the strength and courage, because courage is part of it, that we had to say, this was really hard. Can you forgive me for that? You know, and I asked him as well as him asking me. And it was really important. But
yeah, this is subtle. What you're describing is subtle, Jeannie, because I was thinking about my sister, Roseanne, who died of leukemia. And who died of lung cancer. And I remember going into the hospital after she found out it was going to be a very short time for her. I sat there and then I started to do what you did, which is to really talk about some heavy things. And she turned to me and she said, cigarette in hand, let's not.
Ah.
And so I was just quiet. I just stared at her. And she said, I think what I would like to do is talk about some of the best times that we have had. Now,
say what you want.
You get to set the agenda. Yeah. And so I said, great. And that's what we did. Mm-hmm. And we never went over any of the difficult things.
It brought you to the same place, right? To a place where when she went, you felt like you had...
I don't know. I'm glad we did that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was something kind of beautiful about that. Yeah. She was quite brave in death. Mm-hmm. So in a surprising way. So I'm thinking, that could so easily be labeled sloth. Oh, she's avoiding the real stuff.
But she made a choice. I mean, she actually made a decision.
So she confronted
sloth.
The
yeah,
self.
Exactly. And I think that that's it. What sloth does is to avoid decisions.
Avoid decisions.
Avoid
okay.
decisions.
All right. Bill, Faith Middleton with Gina. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Listen,
you're welcome.
I am a retiree, and I retired in 2010. And this is fascinating about sloth, because I even directed a play called The Seven Deadly Sins. But what sloth meant to me is what it meant to Faith until now. And I was so anxious to be retiring. I retired at age 75, and I was I had written plays and screenplays, and I decided to write another play. And suddenly, I simply couldn't. I couldn't. My wife said, pick a project and finish it. Now, how is that sloth, or is that because I... I'm okay financially. Sadly, I lost my wife in May, but I'm dealing with grief. But
sorry,
What is? I think this definition of sloth is fascinating to me. So I don't have to do anything to make a living, but I consider Facebook the village fountain where people gather.
Absolutely.
I keep track of people like that.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, you're going, where are you moving to?
No, that's great.
And I don't think that,
So let me ask you, Bill, do you feel, so would you describe this as feeling stuck? It's, you don't sound like a man who's walking around kind of oblivious or trying to deny what's happening. Here you are, you're calling our show and discussing this with us, which is laudable. And so I was thinking to myself, I bet Bill has a kind of creative block. And then I thought, no, maybe Bill's just, stuck.
I'm wondering, Bill, whether you're just done. I mean, that's different when you could say, no, this is sort of what Faith was saying. I mean, there are certain times when you say, I have written my plays, I have done my stuff, I'm done. Now I'm going to enjoy this other stuff. I don't have a deadline now. You don't have to impose a deadline.
No, I don't have a deadline, and I don't have to scramble.
Yeah.
Well, how does it feel?
It feels good most of the time, but then sometimes I do email. I stay in touch with my children, and have contacts with friends here in New Haven. And yet, I think I like the Facebook, but sometimes it seems like a kind of electronic twiddling my thumbs.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, too.
It can feel that way. So you need more human company, right? Is that what you're telling us?
That I do.
Yeah.
That I do, and I'm not ready for a companion yet because she died in May.
Oh.
But suddenly, and I don't know if my heavy grieving intersects with sloth.
No, grief is real work, Bill. Grief is real work. That's very hard work. That's heavy lifting. What you're doing now is the real heavy lifting. So you have to give yourself a lot of credit for that. It takes a lot of sleep. It takes really taking care of yourself. That's real work.
And may I say, you sound like a great guy.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Hey,
for
like
what that's worth, thank you so much.
I like you.
Oh, thank, I know. I'm just sucking up to you. That's like, okay. Thank you so much.
I always, I'm usually taking my dogs to Edgerton Park about this time, and I always catch your show, please.
Oh, hey, that's so nice of you to say and to listen. Thank you so much. All right, Bill. All right, keep going. One foot in front of the other.
That's right.
Okay. Bye-bye. 203-776-9677. Gina Bereke is on the show, literature professor, Hartford Current columnist. She's at UConn. And we are, this is the last of the seven deadly sins.
Well, we have to put it off. We put it off.
Well, I kept saying, oh, no, I'm sure there's another sin that we can talk about because I just couldn't imagine. And now this turns out to be probably even beyond lust.
Well,
it is the most intriguing, most meaningful of all of those.
Well, lust, I mean, you know, sex can be slothful. I mean, just because something is energetic doesn't mean it's not slothful when you're doing it. When you're doing something because it's routine, when you're doing it because it's expected, you're doing it without, you're thinking about something else, that's when, this is what we were talking a little bit about the break, that's when you're not being mindful. You talk a lot about mindfulness. And I think that mindfulness is the opposite of sloth.
Now, this is, let me try to see if I can provoke a different way of looking at this. When you talk about sex that way, I was having a conversation with a group of people, and I said, and somebody at the table said, well, what about this difference? And it was men and women. Mm-hmm. What about the difference of men wanting sex more often traditionally than women do? And you know, what about that? And one of the women said, you know what, who's married, I think it's great. And, you know, everybody, men and women, looked at her and, you know, like, well, she must be having great sex. What about? And she said, no, it's not that. I just want to have sex as many times as my husband does. She said, but the fact that he does means I do it. Mm-hmm. And then I realize his drive is what is making that bond of intimacy for us. It's keeping us close the way sex does. And so she said, there really is a good role for this in a couple.
Yeah.
And I thought, what a great thing to say. What a great way to look at that.
Absolutely. And I think that is part of why it's sort of one of the ways of defining sins is by looking at what virtue is their opposite.
But you see,
absolutely.
You could be just going through the motions, but you feel really close at the end.
Right. But I think that's what I'm saying is that the opposite of sloth, when you engage, you know, meaningfully in something, like you think, I don't want to go for a walk today. I don't want to do this. I don't want to all of those things that we know that are good for us that we don't want to do. I don't want to exercise. I don't want to. It would just be easier to sit here. And then you go for a walk, you know, and or you go on the treadmill or you go to the gym or whatever it is that you do. And you're sitting there going, I'm proud of myself, right? I'm so glad I did this.
But here is the question that I have for you. Are you driven, Gina Bereke? Are you a driven person who that's why you fear sloth as much as you do? I don't mean I'm not shrinkifying
you
here. I'm saying this about anybody. You know, would we go to all the driven people and would they all say, oh, no, sloth is the worst? You know, it is the worst. I don't answer right yet because I have to take a break and everybody's going to want to hear what you have to say. We'll be right back with more of the Faith Middleton Show. Gina's essay on sloth is on our website, WNPR.org, with all of our recipes. You can go there now. Click on programs and we'll be right back. Yeah. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR or join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol and Marion Roy, who's working on the show today. So I guess you could ask that question. Are babies slothful? You know, are they? So, Gina, as we go to calls, I want to say, what about the connection between desperate fear of sloth, which is really wasting time instead of getting to the real stuff? So desperate fear of sloth and being a driven personality. You know, what do you think?
I think that's a great question. And I wonder which is, this is the chicken and egg thing. You know, I always tell my students that they have to know that a chicken is just an egg's way of making another egg, right? You know, so it's sort of, you have to turn the question around a little bit. I don't know whether I'm driven because I'm so afraid of wasting time, or whether my fear of wasting time is actually what propels me to be sort of focused and ambitious. I would say that it's people who have the same sort of real fear of time passing without their being aware of it may have experienced the way that I did, and that a number of people have, loss, some kind of loss very early. My mother died when I was pretty young, and I think that I was very aware that life comes with an expiration date. And in fact, I was just online with a guy at the supermarket, and we were looking at some expiration date on the thing that was going through, or he was buying something that was discounted because it was about to expire or get old. And he said, "Isn't it good that we don't come with expiration dates?" I said, "You think we don't come with expiration dates? What are you kidding?" I said, "I'm just, you know, they're disguised. It's under the labeling, but all of us have an expiration date, honey." You know, and this was, I have no idea who this man was. He was just standing behind
was
me in
he
the
glum?
Stop and Shop.
Was he glum as he left the store?
Well, I think he was a little less happy, but I mean, but it's,
have a nice day.
I'm using my gas points on mileage right now. But it's sort of, it's not letting things accumulate. It's not letting, it's not putting all of this time in then not to sort of reap what you sow. I mean, what makes me sad is to think about when you said people look back at their life and regret. Very few people, I think, I mean, maybe, you know, again, if they've done sort of egregious harm to others or something. But when people think about regrets, I think it is, they think about the fun they didn't have. They don't think, "Oh gosh, I wish I hadn't." You know, they're not lying on their deathbed thinking they'd eaten more rice cakes. You know, they're not lying there thinking that they should have done fewer things in life, had fewer experiences.
You are making me think about I have known people who I would describe as having lost a moral center. Mm. I mean, they're immoral, just lost it. In other words, they go through life, you know, if their circumstances dictate that they do this or they do that, or they go back on promises or take advantage of people financially, you know, cheat in a relationship, they would just go ahead and do that because, you know, I can't think about that. I just have to think about myself. Well, and then I think, oh, wow, is that a slothful person?
I think it absolutely is. One of the parts that I have in the essay is that, you know, sloth has never written a thank you note, sent a birthday card on time, or entertained angels unawares, because that takes too much effort. Sloth doesn't do that. Sloth does not have any sense of community. Sloth, like every other sin, and we've talked about this, from every sin, from gluttony to greed to lust, to, you know, it is narcissism. The root of all of this is narcissism.
Self-centered.
Right. So that sloth says, "I'm okay, Jack." You know, that's a British phrase. "I'm all right, Jack. You don't have to bother with everybody. Let everybody else look after everybody else. It's too much work." You know, sloth doesn't go to the soup kitchen. Sloth doesn't donate time for a good cause. Sloth just says, "Somebody else will do it. Why do I have to do it? Let somebody else do it. They have more energy than I do. They have more time." Slothful people are the ones who never have time. They don't have time to do anything. Slothful people don't return because they're so busy. They don't have time to get back to you on anything. They don't, you know, how long? I mean, it takes 2.5 seconds to reply to an email or send back a phone call or whatever. And again, we all have days where we can't do that. But sloth is that kind of narcissism that just is, I'm too busy to answer right now. I'm just exhausted. I'm just going to take a long bath. I'm going to do something. But that,
And entitled. I can do anything I want because this is the goal that I have.
Yeah.
I can kind of do anything. So, Sebastian, Faith Middleton with Gina Borecka, welcome to the show. We're talking about the seventh deadly sin, according to us, which is sloth. And we would define that as a wasting time because of Gina Borecka's great essay that's on our website right now at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Hi, Sebastian.
Yes, hello. I wanted to say a few things about your show and sloth. I heard someone called in who had a drinking problem, and there's a new drug out there called Topamex that really helps with alcoholism. And I'm sorry to hear that that gentleman had lost his wife, but I see sloth with my mother, who's in a nursing home right now, and these people are using those fancy new wheelchairs, and they're not getting up and walking when they do have the ability to, and it's not because of the aches and pains. And I think, you know, you do need to, as Daryl Hall and John Oates had said, take a drink and a quick decision. You have to decide to do something in your life. And part of that is sloth is depression. And if you're slothful, you don't exercise. And then the result is you get fat. And the Protestant work ethic is to accomplish things. And the Catholic holy days of obligation, you have an obligation to do things. You can't sit around and expect things to happen for you. You have to do them yourself. And from my perspective, I do some artwork, and nobody's knocking on my door saying, hey, Sebastian, you got any artwork? I have to, like, seek these museums and places to show myself. It's good to be a writer, but don't just keep it in your drawer. Send it to somebody who wants to publish it.
Yeah. Thank you, Sebastian. Thanks for your comment.
There was a lot going in on that. I think that the idea that, you know, a body at rest wants to stay at rest. I mean, it's really, you know, there was a great comic I heard, I don't remember who it was, who said, you know, what's the first thing you want to do when you get up in the morning? Go back to sleep. I mean, when you wake up in the morning, he said, here's this miraculous thing that just happened. You have regained consciousness. And the thing that you want to do, having once again regained consciousness, is to go as far back into the unconscious, to being unconscious as possible. He said, you're going to have to get up. It's like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to wash my body with water again. You know, I mean,
That is very funny.
But it is. The body at rest wants to stay at rest, I think, is true. And it, you know, of course, if something is going to make things easier for us, we want to do that. So that if you could roll around in a wheelchair, it's probably going to be harder to make yourself get up and do something. And there are lots of, you know, with our earlier caller, Bill, saying that he sees Facebook as like a piazza where people are meeting, which I like. But if you're using that as your way of meeting, you're probably not going to the real piazza or the real coffee shop and sitting and meeting people and talking to them for real, and that's a different kind of connection. So we can't let those substitutes that are very attractive become the real things. They are like the simulacra, right? They're the substitute. They're the artificial version of the real thing, and we can't rely on them because then we lose the ability to make ourselves do the real thing.
Are you saying that the simple act of making a decision eliminates the label of slothful? In other words, a writer, this seems to be going on with writers, you know, fairly regularly. A writer will have written a certain number of books and then will say, you know, as we see with Philip Roth, that's the end. I'm done. I am really retiring.
He's not done. He's not done.
Yeah, I know. He has things to say. but anyway, so we've seen this over and over again. You know, when I do the ninth novel or whatever it is, I am really done. And some people are done. Mm-hmm. And they just stop, you know. So
I think that being done
because they confronted it and made the choice. Or you're saying that's not slothful.
No, I think that you can make a decision.
Now they've decided to waste time.
But now it's not wasting time. It's like finding another quest, not to sound like Joseph Campbell,
How do you know they're going to? What is wrong? Here's what I want to know in praise of wasting time. Mm-hmm. What is wrong with spending time without a purpose, without wasting it? You know, yeah. Because there's something that feels so delicious. Do I sound overworked? There's something that sounds so delicious about those periods. You're not watching a clock, living by a clock. You're wandering.
But that's back to the mindfulness idea. That's making a decision to be in that moment, and you're actually doing those things. You're making connections. You're having an idea. You're nurturing and you're nourishing something in you. It's the wasting time is the junk food of the emotional and spiritual life, as opposed to the banquet that you're preparing. So that when you're wasting time for, again, because
I mean, you can't live on it.
You can't. There's nothing sustaining in it.
It's good sometimes.
But sometimes it's good. Junk food is very good. But again, it's not something that, and it's not what you want to give to people you love all the time.
I think I fear from a discussion like this that people think any wasting of time is not a good idea. And
no.
That's why I keep saying, but I'm speaking in praise of occasional wasting of time.
Right. Because we're going to come back to the word waste. Because I would say that what you're talking about that gives you actual pleasure, that makes you feel good, that you enjoy, that's not a waste. If it's giving you pleasure, if it's giving somebody else pleasure, if it's doing somebody good, then it's not a waste. By definition, it's not a waste. The waste is when you're online at the DMV, no one wants to talk to you, and you don't have a book or a newspaper. You know, and you can't even like look around and there's nothing funny on the walls. You know, if you get into a conversation with somebody, then you haven't wasted that time. You've used it. You've enjoyed it. But when your anger is often a waste of time, if it's just that black cloud or a gray fog of anger, if it's not useful, if it's transformative, then it's not a waste of time. But if you're just sitting there angry in a traffic jam that you can't do anything about, in some kind of frustrating situation that you're not getting anything out of, that's a waste of time. To make yourself miserable over somebody who you can't change is a waste of time, as opposed to dealing with the issues that you have to confront in yourself.
Liz, Faith Middleton with Gina Borecka, welcome to our show, which is exploring sloth, the seventh deadly sin. Go ahead, Liz.
Thanks. I actually called when you were talking about retirees, but your most recent bit of your conversation reminded me of my mother had a wonderful saying, and it's helping me in retirement, when I'm just resting. We used to say, Mom, what are you doing, when she was just sitting? And she'd say, I'm letting my soul catch up with my body.
Oh, that's great.
And, I mean, she knew the value of solitude and just letting things happen in her mind without directing them, because they're capable of taking care of themselves, all those ideas. But the thing that I've found about retirement is I've been retired 5 years now, and I'm loving it. But
I do hear that from retirees.
Yes, at the beginning of retirement, I kind of thought the Puritan ethic hangs heavy over most of us, that my worth is defined by what I do. Mm-hmm. So I got to find things to do. Well, that way madness lies, because you find so many things that you can't really attach to any of them. And the freedom of retirement is you're free to make mistakes. Mm. Start something, and so it's not what you really want to spend your time on. Just don't do it.
Yeah, that's great.
Keep your time and do something else with it. And I love the freedom of the control over my own time. If my daughter calls and says, can you pick the kids up at daycare today? I'm in a meeting and it's going on. I say, yeah, sure. That's such a joy.
That's great. And that's important. Again, that's important. That's important work. And what you said about being able to stop what you're doing, I also think is important, because that's back to the decision stuff.
Yeah.
It's not like you're just on some kind of path that somebody else has set out for you. You can say, you know what? This isn't working for me. I'm not going to take this trip. I'm going to get on the other bus.
Well,
I'm going someplace else.
The funny thing is, I could have done that when I was working before. I didn't have to retire to discover that. I was just kind of too dumb.
No,
that is so smart. That is great. I love that comment. Hey, thank you so much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Okay,
thank
good
you.
Luck Bye. To you. Keep putting one foot in front of the other. All right, 203-776-9677. That's quite a remark, isn't it? I mean, we have about a minute to go. But
My soul is catching up with my body. That's a great line. And I love, I mean, because the importance of contemplation is, you know, that's a great thing. That's also important. That's not a waste of time. Again, think of it as the junk food of the soul. We don't need it. It's the stuff that doesn't satisfy. You just feel stupid afterwards. That's what a waste of time is. You know when you're wasting your time and you know when you're not. I think we really do.
I think on vacation, such pressure to not be slothful.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Part of a great thing about a vacation is to wander aimlessly and with no destination in mind, if you ask me. So that it's too bad we didn't get to talk more about that. Gina Borecka, as always, thank you so much. Fascinating. Love your essay on sloth. That's at our website right now at WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. You are so brilliant.
Thank you so much.
As always, this show is about the richness of life. You can find the books, people, and all those recipes for dinner, delicious wine and cocktails up there right now at our website, WNPR.org. Click on programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.